Well, as a programme of talking heads, the words of David Burns sprang to mind. You may find yourself in a shotgun shack if you can't afford a home of your own, or indeed you may find yourself the leader of a left-of-centre political party and ask, how did I get here? Which is exactly the first thing Holly Curran said at her first press conference as the new leader of the Social Democrats. Well, earlier today, though, she used her first outing at Leaders' Questions as the new leader to speak on behalf of those who have been locked out of home ownership.
Taoiseach, I'm a member of the first ever generation who will be worse off than our parents. This didn't happen by accident. Political choices made by successive governments have resulted in the aspirations and dreams of an entire generation being either diminished or destroyed. Nowhere is the political betrayal of young people more evident than in the housing disaster. Skyrocketing rents and exorbitant house prices have resulted in the collapse of home ownership rates. Taoiseach, the housing disaster isn't just about bricks and mortar. It's about young people whose adult lives are on hold because they can't afford to move out of their childhood bedrooms. It's about couples postponing having a family because they can't find affordable housing. It's about the stress and anxiety that causes once happy relationships to break down. It's about a lack of hope. It's about despair. It's about fear for the future. That your life will be permanently on hold.
And Gabby, it's also about jobs, as Joan Collins raised also in Leaders of Questions. She was referring to the Chambers Ireland report of businesses of varying sizes around the country and their concerns about attracting workers.
Yes, so we have heard these concerns from businesses several times now. They're really expressing all this worry about, you know, we're trying to recruit new staff, we're trying to pull staff in, and they're saying, do you know what, I don't want to come to Dublin or Cork or Galway, these main cities, because I have nowhere to live or I cannot afford the rent. Which is, I suppose, why we're hearing now businesses are trying to, you know, buy accommodation for their employees. Really quite significant, the Chambers Ireland, you know, they made this presentation for an Oireachtas committee, and they're saying that Indigenous businesses, they're actually losing out on opportunities to grow because of the lack of housing and infrastructure in Ireland. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, when he was Enterprise Minister, you know, he openly admitted, yes, housing is a challenge to our, I suppose, economic growth. And it's interesting to see that housing now is such a huge issue that it's not just, it doesn't just affect, I think Holly Cairns is right there, you know, she's saying it affects young people, but it's actually gone way beyond that. It's now affecting society as a whole and the growing of our economy.
And as you say there, this practice of large companies buying housing. And Padraig O'Bean, what do you think about people who are trying to acquire a house, finding themselves potentially in a bidding war against a multinational?
Well, I think people are going to be squeezed even further. So they're already in bidding wars against the likes of the vulture funds who are purchasing houses in the state. And now they're going to be in a competition with large multinationals with very deep pockets. And, you know, there isn't a sector of Irish society that's not affected by this crisis. From the 400 people who died in homelessness in Dublin in the last 5 years, now we have CFOs and CEOs making decisions on whether or not to come to Ireland or whether or not to expand production in Ireland on the basis of the inability of the government to increase the supply of housing. And, you know, it's an incredible situation that even the housing prices at the moment are creating wage inflation. Because if you really want to employ somebody in a certain location now, you have to be able to keep increasing the wages to do that, which makes services more expensive, which makes products more expensive, and it's adding to the cost of living crisis that people are dealing with.
Carl Crowe, this isn't the first time this has happened. In the early 2000s, wages chased house prices, but at least there was a supply of housing then. Now the supply is limited, and the potential for even greater pressure on wage inflation and national competitiveness, quite apart from the emotional impact that Holly Cairns was talking about, the potential for house price inflation and wage inflation as a knock to national competitiveness is worse.
There's huge pressure. I meet with a lot of companies in my own county. Shannon would be a real hotbed for foreign direct investment. I think about 40% of the companies there have come in from abroad. They're now very limited because they're willing to recruit. They also can't also get graduates. You know, there isn't this stream of graduates that we always had. There's a more diversification now of where people are going for courses, but there isn't housing accommodation. Housing overall, there's a specific here in Chambers we're referencing the availability of housing for workers. Housing overall is increasing in supply. We saw last year housing in this country reached 30,000 units, up 41% on the year before, 45% pre-COVID. So we are converging on that 40,000 unit per annum that
sure,
we aim for.
I suppose Chambers Ireland wrote this report in the recent past based on their findings, surveying businesses all around the country, and it doesn't seem to be making the impact that you're suggesting.
Yeah, I've also heard some large multinationals suggesting that they would like to play a role in building houses. And this isn't some new fandangled idea. If you look at the older streets of Dublin, Guinness built a lot of homes. Jacobs did for their employees. Same in Cork with Beamish, Shannon Development in County Clare. This was an old theory that a business would come into an area, build or contribute at the very least to some housing scheme. And I've gone to Minister Dara O'Brien with this because there are companies saying we will play a part. We want to invest in this country. We want to have a seedbed of employees available to us and families around us.
Right.
So there is another element of housing.
Is there an irony though to sending out all of our ministers all over the globe with the goal of saying, do you know what, Ireland's great, come to Ireland, invest in Ireland, and then they come here and then their staff have nowhere to live?
Well, I think it's certain sectors are more squeezed. Yes, there's the housing. Of course, housing is an issue and there are certain pockets. I would say the west of Ireland is still very ripe for investment. Dublin is very much at capacity level. There is an increase in housing supply. Some areas are seeing it more than others, but it's not, as Patter says, that there's an absolute failure. The metrics itself would point that there's a convergence. We're closing in 40% increase on 1 year, 45% on the other.
It's less than 30,000 houses built this year when we need 50,000 houses. So there's a gap in there's a radical gap in the production of houses, even the spatial development of the country at the moment. So if you're a young person who's just got a degree, you'll get a job most likely in Dublin, but you can't live in Dublin because the prices are too dear. So you live 30 to right. 50 miles away and you're commuting every day.
I just want to get Eoghan O'Riordan on this issue of companies building houses and what Cathal Crowe mentioned there of the likes of Guinness's building houses. But it develops a relationship between people and their employer where there's a dependent relationship. In the case of Guinness's, there was no joining a trade union if you were an employee of Guinness's. The benefits were good, but you took what Guinness gave you and you liked it.
Yeah, I think we're going back to the mistakes of depending on the market too much. And I think what happened out of COVID was, in fairness to government, they actually realised that the state needed to be bigger because a lot of the fault lines within of Irish society and public services were exposed by COVID and government reacted to it. And I think in the last 10 years, and Holly Kearns made reference to this, in fact, she said that Fine Gael had been in government all her adult life. I had to pinch myself, and it's true. She's a young woman in her 30s, and for the last 13 years or so, or 12 years or so, it's been Fine Gael who've been in power. But I suppose the point is that at the beginning of that period, we were talking about phrases like negative equity. We're talking about, you know, people who had mortgages they couldn't service, and then we came out of that period, and now we have a situation where we had, you know, we collapsed house prices, and now the house prices are unaffordable for people, and rent has gone out of control, and we can't get guards, and we can't get nurses. Not just the private sector. I mean, think of the public servants that we can't get guards, can't get nurses.
So, are you talking about key worker accommodation,
I think
that they have in London, where there is affordable housing built for nurses?
I think at this point,
men,
right?
That
let's take the politics out for a second. If government can learn from COVID and realise the state needs to be bigger, then government has to learn from this housing flux over the last 10, 15 years and say, look, we have to have the state much more heavily involved. We've been leaving this to the market for too long. We stepped out of building social housing 20 years ago. We have to return to this. And if that means replicating what happens in the UK in terms of a London allowance, which is weighted for certain public servants, if it means, you know, encouraging investing companies to build accommodation for their workers, well, then so be it, because all the old solutions haven't worked. And I think we have to revert back to what worked in the past.
Funded by what?
Well, funded by the state. Funded by investment. I mean, we have said this for so long about public investment, public land. The successful housing schemes of 100 years ago were a response to a similar type of crisis that we're having now. And the old solutions are the best.
All right.
The Central Mental Hospital moved to Portrane in recent times, and the government could have, if they wanted, on the space that was there, built actual accommodation for the people working in that location. There is a logic for the state to step in and for public sector workers to try and build accommodation to allow them to live close to where they work rather than have to commute 40, 50, 60 miles.
Can I just pick up on this idea of the state having to be this grand developer? We have the Land Development Agency, who is, I mean, is that not what their goal is supposed to be? But then we hear that actually they didn't build any houses. All the houses they delivered were built by developers because it's actually cheaper to do that. So is the solution for the state to build all the housing?
It needs to fly in the two wings. There needs to be reform of the private sector of building houses. We need a good private sector to build houses. It's not going to get fixed without that. But if you talk to most builders, they're not actually building at the moment, because the reason that they're not building is because there's a massive increase in inflation in terms of the products that they're using. There's no confidence in the contracts they
have. And Cathal Crowe, given that that building inflation, how would that be improved by a massive injection of cash and a frantic search for the resources in terms of building workers and materials to deliver that housing?
So whilst inflation's quite high, families are feeling a pinch. The state coffers and the tax take of this country has been at its highest in many, many years. So there is plenty of money in $4 billion per annum committed to housing. And that's pittance, I suppose, to a family tonight who isn't housed, and we've too many of those.
There's a question here by email to latedebate@rte.ie. This might be a mad idea, says the listener, but why can't the state just build a massive amount of timber frame social housing on state-owned lands?
It needs to be quality housing in the first instance. Now, there are examples. Mill Street is an example where modular-style housing has been used for Ukrainian refugees who've come in. Just to go back a small bit to some of the critical workers, I've put down a series of Dáil questions in the past fortnight relating to nurses' accommodation. My mother was a nurse in University Hospital Limerick, then the Limerick Regional. When she graduated, when her class graduated, there was on campus a nurse's home, if you like, and every hospital system had that. That fell by the wayside in the mid-80s.
But that's fine when you're a graduate nurse and you're living in ineffectively what's a step on from student accommodation. People want to build lives and a family life around where they work, they need affordable housing.
The point was that style of accommodation was for graduate nurses, graduate doctors to be close or on the hospital campus. A lot of those facilities are still there in a state of dereliction. They're not equipped, they're not configured to be acute environments for hospital care. They could provide accommodation, I believe, for those frontline workers.
And what would you say to the listener who texts in saying talent doesn't want to be at the whim of their employer as their landlord? This is especially tone deaf given the current layoffs.
Well, I suppose we have... The layoffs are particularly sectoral at the moment. I mean, we've had PayPal. They seem mostly to be in the smart tech, social media sphere. There are other industries who simply can't recruit enough. I'm spokesperson aviation, and most Fridays I go around and meet aviation companies. They simply don't have the graduates. The college courses are full, but we have an insatiable appetite. And just as you were saying, we probably do need in the next 4 or 5 years a population rise. But that's going to add further problems. There's a convergence point here where housing has to meet the needs of an increased population that we currently don't have yet.
And according to the Children's Rights Alliance, Gabby, the government has a demark on child homelessness. So quite apart from employees, we have children and families in homelessness.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite shocking because, of course, you know, we talk about homeless people, but when we realise that actually it's really the most vulnerable citizens of our society, which are, you know, children who are, you know, innocent and totally harmless, and they've just come into the world and, you know, we're giving them an E for housing. We know that obviously the Taoiseach has set up a department within his own department to tackle child poverty. But, you know, this Children's Rights Alliance group saying that there's a need to introduce more measures to tackle child poverty and family homelessness, particularly in traveller families, families with disabilities and people living in direct provision. I mean, how many times have we heard calls for, especially those really marginalised communities who are often, I suppose, saying that they've been left forgotten behind and left behind. So, you know, it's very good and well to say, well, the tech workers that are coming here, they're working in Google or any of the big four, they don't have anywhere to live in Crown Canal Dock. But like, if children don't have anywhere to sleep at night.
Colm, if I might just, I think we need to talk about the insecurities in people's lives, because talking here about investors coming in from abroad and building houses for their, or accommodation for their workers, work now is very insecure. I mean, there's about 40% of young people under 30 years of age who are in the workforce are in insecure work. If you add insecure accommodation onto that, that's a lot of insecurity in your life. And I think we need to analyse that. And having that insecurity in a young life when it comes to homelessness, because We have depended so much on the rental sector, the private rental sector, the house people. And this is where it comes back to the state. The state, I know people may feel it's an old solution, but what the state does provide is a level of security. And the problem with homelessness is that level of insecurity. Now, we're talking about eviction ban.
You mean the state as a landlord, the state as a builder?
Yes, the state as a landlord, or the state to give that level, through local authorities, that level of continuity to a family so they can feel as if they're not waiting for a government announcement on an eviction ban to be extended or whatever, or depending on
the Children's Rights Alliance are talking about, you know, children and families with disabilities, where there may actually be bespoke solutions needed, or travellers where there may be particular types of housing or accommodation needed. So it's not just mass house building. There's actually a more granular approach has to be taken too.
Absolutely.
In the case of housing for travellers, for many years, county councils returned money to the state, to the central government, in relation to the budgets that they had to build homes for travellers. Absolutely shocking situation that was happening for people who were, you know, finding it really difficult to get homes.
Is that a function, though, of local authorities' ineptitude, or the fact that there is, on a local level, maybe there's no political pressure on them to spend that money?
I would say there's a political reluctance in many county councils in relation to spending money on homes for travellers, and that's the actual fact of it. And it's a disgraceful situation, and it's absolutely wrong. In the cases of children who are homeless, it's incredible. 3,450 children currently homeless, many of them homeless in hotel rooms for a number of years now. So they've actually spent 2 or 3 years now living in a hotel room. Every aspect of their development, whether it's their mental health, their nutrition, their education, their socialisation, all affected in relation to being put into that situation.
All right, Colm Grove.
Colm, one of the aspects of the report was direct provision. Now, I was one of those, as we walked into the halls of the Convention Centre in May 2020 to form a government. None of us would have foreseen what was coming in terms of the war in Ukraine and the crisis that has brought. We want it, and we still aim to close down direct provision and to have other forms of accommodation, but it simply at this time isn't realistic. We're in crisis mode and have been for the last 11 months since the war began in Ukraine. So it's essential that we continue to roll out that style of accommodation. But I would agree with others. I was a school teacher like Aon before becoming a TD. The model of homelessness I would have seen as a councillor back in the years was very different to what we're seeing in recent years. But there is a closing in on this. We are seeing a lot more funding going to homeless services. We are seeing more houses being built. We've seen the eviction ban, which has been very successful.
And would you favour extending it?
That has to be legally tested. I think it's Article 42 of our Constitution deals with private property. We can't simply extend this into perpetuity. We have to get legal advice on this. Of course, there's benefits.
But the Offences Against the State Act is extended every year, every time it comes up for renewal.
It has benefited thousands of families. And if there's a legal way of doing it, I think there's good merit to doing it.
How has it been successful if homelessness numbers have risen since it was put in place?
Because it would have been worse otherwise.
But the reality is, through no fault of their own, many people face eviction because people are returning from abroad, they want to sell the home, and this has placed a ban on it
until
the 31st of March, during a time of absolutely crazy inflation where people couldn't meet utility bills. Government saw it, and they did it also during the COVID pandemic to protect people during a particularly tight and vulnerable time. That's what we've done. If it's possible to go beyond that, we will do as well. Right. There needs to be balances struck, though, because there are young people who've gone abroad for work, they now want to return home, they find that their house is locked into a rental contract.
Gabby, I want to get on to a related topic, which is housing, specifically housing related to Niall Collins, Cathal Crowe's party colleague. He's going to clarify issues around planning permission for a house on family land a number of years ago. What is this issue, and what is he expected to say?
Yes, so it was a report from the Ditch website earlier this week that's landed him, I suppose, a little bit of hot water. So the issue around the planning permission that he made in 2001, the allegation is that he gave incorrect information on that planning permission.
Which he rejects.
Which he totally rejects. He's also said that he's disputed many of the claims made in the Ditch article. He says that he's seeking legal advice on it. Now, I suppose the opposition parties were very quick to say we need a Dáil statement on it. He has agreed to give that Dáil statement. We were expecting it this week. It's more likely now that it'll probably be next week instead. I suppose there's a couple of issues at play here. You know, there seems to be this allegation of, you know, should he have been granted a house to be able to build in a house and land that his father owned when he owned another one. That's sort of the first allegation. You know, he totally rejects that everything on the application was correct, and he is going to make a statement on it next week. Of course, in the background of all this is, you know, former Minister Damien English, who also, you know, it emerged that he gave incorrect information on a planning application. The Ditch broke the story again, and, you know, he resigned very quickly after that. This does not seem to be the case here. Niall Collins totally rejects the allegations about the Ditch.
And he's also, he hasn't come out and resigned as Damien English did. Carl Crowe, he's due to make a statement, but presumably party colleagues have sought information and reassurance on this before they go out to bat. Well, what do you know and what do you expect to hear?
I know Niall a long time. I know him before he went into politics. He's a man of great integrity, a great TD and a really good minister. It's important to note, Niall and I were both elected to the County Council, Clare and Limerick, on the same day in 2004. What we're talking about here predates that by 3 years. It's a 2001 planning application. It's also important to note that at the time, he owned a house on Father Russell Road in Limerick City. That wasn't a pressure zone. Neither was Partick's Well, a few miles out the road, where his family, this was family land.
So you're saying that the specific regulation in this is...
By the rules of 2001...
You could not own a house within the pressure zone if you were applying for a one-off house planning permission in that pressure zone.
Yes,
a house in another area that wasn't within that pressure zone, that under law did not affect...
Pressure zone jargon in Limerick in the county development plan didn't come into play until after 2004. If you look back at the 2001 planning file, and this will all be in the public domain very soon, he was compliant with planning policy in 2001. He wasn't a political office. This was family land, a family home for his wife and his kids. And you know what? There's two things, I think. There's two subplots to this that should be investigated further. And I would say the public, there needs to be a debate about people being allowed to build on their family land in the first instance. There needs to be another debate, I think, about the constant badgering of politicians. He hasn't done wrong, and yet they're going back on a life 3 years before he entered public office. You'd want to be living a life of absolute white purity, an altar boy's life, to be going into politics these days, because the amount of digging on one's past, if he hasn't done anything wrong, and he's very clear in that, let's all move on.
Okay. I'm speaking as a former altar boy.
Makes no mention of the house that he already owned, and that's very clear. And also, it's not clear if it was a clerical error or not, but we did report in the Irish Independent that obviously Niall Collins is the name that he made the application under, but there is also some references to Niall Collins, which is not clear, you know, where that's coming from. But he's contesting that he made the application.
And Colin,
can I
make this point? I mean, look, we asked for Niall Collins to make a statement, and he's making a statement, and that's fair enough. And I do take the point that it was before his political life. It's very different to Damien English's scenario where an application was made during his political career and there was false information on that. That's very different. However, we're still waiting for Damien English to make a statement to the Dáil. Niall Collins has agreed to do it. Damien English has not agreed to do it. And he's still a member of the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party, and we are unaware of any disciplinary action the Fine Gael are taking against him.
Actually, we started off with a clip from Holly Kearns there, Eoghan Riordan, and in her speech she also ruled out a merger with Labour, going back to the time in government, saying trust had been broken between the people and the Labour Party. You were the future once. How did it feel to have the merger ruled out?
Well, I mean, I'm getting tired of every time.
But I'll answer it one more time.
Well, I mean, every time a Sock Dems politician does an interview, they're asked about us, and whenever we do.
We live in a country where will you meet my mate
I hope it's been put to bed now, because, you know, two separate political parties, an awful lot of common ground. My position on this is quite clear. In the aftermath of an election, what I would like to see the Labour Party to do is to talk to other parties of the centre-left with the prospect of leading a government. And between ourselves, the Sock Dems and the Green Party, who I would put in the centre-left, there are 25 seats. If after an election we have more than
fall
that,
into the centre-left as well.
Well, I think I'd talk to the Sock Dems and the Greens first, and we'd see if we have common ground to move forward and to potentially lead a government.
Okay, all right.